This broadcast of the PJC Media Network seeks to present wholesome, thought-provoking, and entertaining content. However, the views expressed by the hosts of PJC Media are theirs and theirs alone. They do not reflect the views of this network or its affiliates. Please utilize listener discretion.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show.
Good evening. Good evening and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Tonight, we will be talking about mass incarceration. We're going to talk about women being incarcerated in jails more so than men. And avoiding pretrial incarceration is challenging for women more so than men, possibly because they have lower incomes than incarcerated men and have a harder time affording bail. Another thing that might make it harder for women is to stay in touch with their families. Jail phone calls cost 3 times more than calls from prison, and other forms of communication are more restricted. Some jails don't even allow real letters, limiting the mail to postcards. 80% of women in jails are mothers, and most of them are the primary caretakers of their children. And women in jails are also more likely to suffer from mental health problems and experience serious psychological distress than men in either correctional setting, the jails or the prisons. So that's just a little bit of what we're going to be talking about. Not only women, but we're going to be talking about men. And right now I'm going to introduce my co-host, Mr. Coleman. Are you there?
I am. Good afternoon. Good evening, Jenny White. How are you?
Hey, today? I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Glad
okay.
to hear from you.
Yeah, glad to hear from you as well. So I was talking just a little bit about women, and I'm sure you're going to add them into your spiel. So it's on you.
Very good. Well, what I wanted to talk about was the new Jim Crow, which is basically it's a book that covers mass incarceration in the age of color blindness. And it's written by Michelle Alexander. And what it does is it outlines the new racial caste system in the United States of how we have turned our system from one thing to another, from the emancipation of slaves in 1865 to Reconstruction. And from the Reconstruction area, which was right after the Civil War, 1865 to 1877, the 13th Amendment was written, which basically says it abolished slavery in the United States, and it provides neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except for punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So the key element in the 13th Amendment is except as a punishment for a crime Because what happened was after the slaves were free, all those plantations lost all their free laborers. And so they no longer had people that were there to work their fields. And so what they did was if you were found to be unemployed or loitering on a corner, if it was two or three black men together, if you didn't have a job, all those things subjected you to be arrested for crimes. And therefore, once you were arrested, you were eligible, unless you had the money to get out of jail, which most people didn't at that point, you had to work it off. So, and a lot of times they had convict leasing programs, which they would lease out the prisoners to different businesses and different farms to work off their debts for the crime of not having a job or loitering to continue to expose involuntary servitude at that point. So that's really where I want to create this foundation of this conversation from. It's starting from there, from the end of slavery into the 13th Amendment and the loophole in that allows for free labor once you're incarcerated, to go to the Reconstruction period, which is right after the Civil War from 1865 to 1877, into the Jim Crow era, which is the late 1870s. And Jim Crow is basically state and local statutes that were enforced racial segregation to disenfranchise and remove political gains that blacks had established during the Reconstruction period. So Jim Crow lasted from the 1870s up until the Civil Rights Movement in 1965. And then, so after, you know, that period of time in which Martin Luther King was during the Civil Rights Movement, and then John F. Kennedy was the president, and Lyndon B. Johnson instituted the civil rights. We had the war on drugs in 1986 that was created by Ronald Reagan. Now, Ronald Reagan, and a lot of people believe that the war on drugs was the war on crack. But this war on drugs began before there was even a drug epidemic. So before there was a crack epidemic, he had created this war on drugs campaign, which became a media campaign as well. And that gave way to creating mandatory minimum, the Anti-Drug Abuse Act, which was established in 1986. Congress passed it. That created mandatory minimums, which were long mandatory sentences for low-level drug crimes. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. And so that's what I wanted to talk about, the number of black men that are in jail. That is no accident. And this impact, in less than 30 years, the U.S. penal system has exploded from 300,000 people to 2 million people. And so that is going to be the foundation of this conversation. And it's basically, it's creating a system where men can, well, men and women, can be legally stopped and frisked and searched and, you know, go to jail for a joint. You can have a joint. And what would happen is once you have been stopped and arrested and the police have this free rein to, now people can If you stop by the police and the police ask you, can they search your vehicle? You can say no. And at that point, they can't legally search your vehicle without your permission. But in a lot of instances, they'll say that they smell marijuana, they smell drugs, and at that point, they say they can call in a police dog to come and sniff around your car to see if you can find anything. And in most traffic stops, for not turning without your signal or expired plates or just because you're driving while black, most of those stops, there's nothing that has been found. So, you know, most people aren't riding around with drugs. But in the instance that they do find something, or maybe they stop you and you have a warrant for child support, you know, they can take you and put you in the system. So it's a catch-22 because the system, the way that it's formulated, it's an invisible systemic system. To where we're operating within this system and within this justice system, and we're really not knowing the injustices that are taking place. I think that unless you are a family member of someone that's been in the prison system and has had subpar legal representation, then you understand, or if you've been in the system or had contact with it, then you can kind of see where it's tainted in one direction. And I can just give you some stats and some instances where in the state of California, they were arresting suspects. And, you know, all the suspects that were, all the black suspects that were arrested for low-level drug offenses were all being charged, you know, on a federal level, whereas the white people that were being caught and charged were all being convicted on a state level, on a misdemeanor level. And so it was like 2,000 blacks that were being charged for drug crimes, and there weren't any whites. So one particular, there was a class action suit that was taken to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court threw it out just based on the basis that even though the evidence was damning to the point of where it was just inevitable to see that, you know, you got 2,000 black people that, you know, are being convicted of the same crimes as white people, but they're all being charged at a higher level than the white people. They still threw it out. And so, you know, the system, even up to the Supreme Court level, has allowed for the police to be able to run rapidly regarding discriminating against black people. Now, I know you threw some statistics out there at the beginning of the show. You want to go back over those?
Did you have anything about women? Because that was the only one. I didn't do the men. I wanted to say something about the women because they get a bad rap. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, they don't have the money that men have to afford bail. And I have someone else that might want to say something on that. And
okay, well, before you go to the caller, I just like to say, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the fact that you just stated that, you know, women don't have the money that men may have to get bond. I think that there, you know, I
okay,
think that's part of
that
the problem
was,
is unemployment.
That was in the study.
I don't know. I didn't read that. I'm just saying that, you know, I think that's a big problem all around. There's a big problem all around.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Do you think that that's a true statement or no?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't agree with that. I think that, you know, men have the same problems as far as posting bail. You know, a lot of men have problems with employment. And so, you know, if you don't have a job, you don't have money. And if you're out there committing crimes to get money, then, you know, in most instances, when it comes down to it, you're getting a public defender. Unless you have the money to, you know, pay for an attorney. So I think, you know, women and men fall in the same categories.
Okay.
In
Women's Mass Incarceration Initiative. Maybe you might want to look at that, because that's where my information came from. Now, I don't know a lot about incarceration because I have never been incarcerated. Don't ever want to go to jail for any reason, not for a traffic situation or anything. But I don't know. Let me go to the caller. Caller, you're on. Hello. Officer Reggie?
Yes?
Are you there?
How are you? How are you?
Good I'm evening. Good. How you doing?
And your co-host, Mr. Cohen. How are you, sir?
Yes. Great. Officer Barnes, how are you today?
I'm listening to what we're what you're discussing. So I guess I have a question, because the dynamics of these traffic stops and the laws that have changed recently has changed the dynamics on the procedures of how they can arrest people, such as example when they passed the marijuana law. How does that change the perspective of a black male today that gets caught with marijuana? Does your study indicate anything about their rights now?
No. This study is from 2010 statistics. So, you know, with the current legalization of some marijuana locally, I know it's still illegal federally, you know, so I don't have those stats and how that would deter, you know, someone from getting arrested if they only have, you know, a gram or less than that of marijuana, which may be legal locally. I think that is still an area where you could still be harassed if you have some drugs, but no, I wouldn't be able to give any solid statistics on how that would affect drug stops at this point. Would you now? I know you are a retired officer. Would you have any up-to-date stats in regards to anything when it comes to the legalization of marijuana?
Be honest with you, I guess I'm embarrassed to the fact is I've caught off guard with not having that information, because I wasn't aware exactly where you were going with this information. But I guarantee you I will look up and find the answers to those questions, so this can be a continuation at some later point.
Yes.
The concern I had was the charges that are made on an individual are different local, state, and federal. But on a traffic stop, there's only two people that can stop you. It's the local and the state. Feds are not interested in traffic stops unless they set this up as a sting.
Right, right.
Okay, so we got to remember that on a traffic stop, that if you are stopped for a traffic violation, that has to be included in the arrest of the original reason for the stop. Now, if you can't justify why they stopped you, then you have an illegal stop at that point. So, again, as you mentioned earlier, the problem is the process of you getting out because the individual can't afford an attorney to represent them. So they fall within the system of being incarcerated because of lack of representation, which makes a big problem for individual that is not able to bail himself out or handle the bond that is set for most people that are not prepared to bond themselves out. So sometimes bonds are set at a higher rate to where that they don't risk flight, as you well know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm quite aware of that.
So that's an issue going back to what you said in regards to I think the what Ms. Jenny was saying was I'm in agreement with you. I think women have the ability to post a bond faster than males, and depending on the setting, such as the urban setting, where we know a lot of especially black males are not working a everyday job or the means of having support. But my thought was, from information that I've seen more black males supported by black women than black men supporting black women.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So okay. That's where the money's at. Oh. The money is with the women.
Okay. You both need to go to Women's Mass Incarceration, the whole pie, 2019. I'm not talking about 10 years ago. I'm talking about right now. So.
Okay, what does it say?
I just told you. Women have a harder time than men affording bail.
Did you say that there were more women in prison than men? Did you say that? Did I hear you say that?
Did I say it was more people, more women? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Did you say that?
I said there are a larger number of women in jails and not prisons.
Okay, because I know the women have increased over 800% over the past 30 years as far as their prison incarceration, and men comprise 90% of the prison population throughout the United States. So it's definitely more men in the prison system. There may be more women in jail. I don't know about that. But basically, what I wanted to cover was the how the incarceration affects your life and your lifestyle, because in some states, once you're a convicted felon, you lose the right to vote forever. You know, you can no longer vote. You can no longer be selected for a jury. You know, it also, so you're legally subjected to legalized discrimination in, you know, not only voting, but in employment, housing, education, public benefits as well. Because, you know, once you are a convicted felon, in most employment applications, they have a box that ask you if you've ever been convicted of a felony, and most people might say that that doesn't deter them hiring you, but in a lot of instances, if you check that box, you know, your application being thrown in the garbage, regardless of what you were convicted of. And then housing, you
you know, if you're a convicted felon, you're no longer eligible for public housing. So, and if you're in public housing and get convicted of a felony, then you're going to get evicted. As far as education, you know, if you're a convicted felon, you can't get student loans, and you aren't eligible for any public benefits. I know they don't have food stamps anymore, but you can't get public benefits. So,
okay, I have a question. I have a question with that,
sure.
And then I have another caller. You said they're unable to vote?
In some states, like in Florida, you're a convicted felon, you can't vote. You lose the right to vote.
Okay, well, why is it that in Florida, the guys that were out of jail were told that they couldn't vote because they had to pay some kind of fee? And then somebody else paid the fee and they were able to vote.
Well, it was you know, similar to a poll tax.
I know, but they still were able to vote. And I have another listener. Caller,
sure,
you had a comment.
Yes. Hello, everybody.
How you doing?
Hello, hello.
My comment, yes.
Your name and
title.
Where are you calling from? Hello, your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Alicia Bond. I'm calling from Columbus, Ohio.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you. I was looking at the title of your broadcast tonight, and you said that women are more incarcerated than men, and I agree with you. I agree with you for one reason, is because I believe that they put in a lot of our women in jail, because if you look back at historical documentation and the Bible and things like that, you will see that women are the greatest creatures on the earth. They're more smarter than men. They're more stronger
than men. All right,
Ohio. Okay. You
Come
know,
on, girl.
The system wants to take the women down because they know the women will start something real quick. So they don't want the women to be, you know, in the front line. They because the men, they more laid back, they more lazy, they more quiet, they more into football and stuff like that. You
All
know
right,
what I'm
okay.
They not okay. Yeah, so this is why they're arresting all the women, because they know the women can start something very powerful, very powerful. And we are warriors and we are fighters and we are very determined to
all
get
right.
the job done and do whatever we got to do to protect our children and our men. And they
there
know
you
that.
Go.
All right.
There you go. And I agree with you.
Okay.
All
right. Right. Okay.
Thanks.
Well, thank you, caller.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you got somebody.
Call again
with you.
Anytime. Anytime.
Okay.
I
sister,
love
thank
it.
Thank you. I will.
Thank you. Okay. I love it. See there. That's what I'm talking about. And having said that, I'm going to go to a commercial. How about that?
Want to start a business or have tax issues? We know exactly how to handle your individual needs. We personalize each individual and give you the time required to focus on your needs. We audit you before the IRS does. The IRS is not on your side, but we are. We set up companies, do tax preparation, tax and retirement planning, bookkeeping, IRS audits, and reviews. Please call me, Deborah Mitchell, owner of Mitchell & Company, for a free consultation at 248-354-5122. And visit my website, MitchellTaxAccounting.com.
This is Terry from Texas, and I love listening to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show.
We'll be back to the Let's Talk. Talk About It, Jenny White Show.
If you are in need of life insurance, auto or home insurance, or need help in getting out of debt, call your helpful insurance agents at Prime Financial Services. Did you know if you add a child rider to your life insurance policy, you can add multiple children for the price of one, starting at $10,000 worth of coverage for under $10. Call today for a free quote at 313-293-0979. Mention you heard this ad on this show for a free gift.
Is your food bland and you want to spice it up? Does it taste like something is missing? What's missing is my seasoning, Butch's Bodacious Seasoning, all-purpose seasoning, good on absolutely everything but ice cream. I'm Linda Porter, President and CEO of Butch's Bodacious Seasoning. To get the spice back in your life, call me at 313-393-2738. You won't regret it. Thank you.
And we're back to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show.
Okay, we're back. This is the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. And we're talking about women and men incarcerated. And I have another caller who would like to speak. Caller, you on the air? Hello, caller. Okay, I guess they didn't have anything to say. If you like, caller, just call back in, press the 1, and you'll be streaming live. Okay, Mr. Coleman.
All right. Yeah, so I'd like to point out another fact of the inequalities in the judicial system regarding crack versus powder cocaine. And there's what they call the 100-to-1 crack versus powder cocaine sentencing disparity, under which distribution of just 5 grams of crack carries a minimum 5-year federal prison sentence, while distribution of 500 grams of powder cocaine carries the same 5-year mandatory minimum sentence. And the way that that was written is because it's been determined that most blacks and minorities were, you know, dealing with crack cocaine, as opposed to, white people were, more white people were dealing with powder cocaine. So that was another way to disproportionately give black and minorities higher prison sentences for 5 grams of crack, well, minimum 5-year federal sentences, but you got to have 500 grams of powder cocaine to get 5-year mandatory minimum. So those are just some of the unjust things that have been done to impact the black families and, Hispanic families. In our community, you know, for almost the past 40 years at this point.
Okay, I have another caller.
Sure.
Caller?
Hello?
Hi, how you doing? What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Morgan. I'm calling from Detroit. How are you guys today?
Good, Morgan. How are you?
Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I just had a comment. I probably logged in at about three to four minutes after the show started, so I apologize. But I wanted to first say that I was really, really excited because I heard, and I'm sorry I don't know your name, but I heard your co-host listing off some statistics that I think are really important for not only people within our community, but just the world to know and understand. there was a phase in my life when I was really passionate about Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration, School to Prison Pipeline. And so this is really a community issue. And I was a little disheartened to see us kind of drift a little bit into the battle of the sexes, because I think that just realistically, you know, there are areas and ways in which I feel black women feel like black men could be more supportive and vice versa. But ultimately, I think that if we fact that this is our community issue, if this is an issue that affects both men and women within the black community at a disproportionate level, we lose sight of the fact that we're all being targeted. We're all being treated with a high level of injustice. And I think that it's so great that you do have Officer Barnes on, who can kind of speak to that other level and give us insight from the other perspective on how we as a community can come together and go against this. Maybe if we can't do it fully understanding the system and what's really at play, we can at least understand kind of the inner workings so we can try to strategize against it. So I just wanted to re-invite into the conversation that this really is a huge issue. I think that it's important to note that men and women, just as in life, have different issues, you know, different struggles. Some of the struggles that women experience going into a prison system might be different, but the issue still stands, that this is our issue as a community. And in this world where there's such an agenda, and I also kind of lean on the spiritual element thing, where there's such an agenda to divide and conquer, you know, a house divided amongst itself cannot stand. And I think that's true for the black community. We really have to band together more so even now to realize that the world is attacking us all, and we all have something really substantial to offer. And I just hope that we can get back to that. So thank you guys so much for this conversation. Thank you
for calling.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and
call back again. I love it. I love it. She's right. She's right. We need to know that men and women are, especially people of color, men and women of color, are getting a bad rap, and we shouldn't have to split it up like, you know, that we normally do. So very good. Good point, Morgan. Love it.
Yeah.
Anyone
I think
else?
Another part.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, anyone
else out there that like to
go ahead, make a comment or ask a question. All you have to do is touch the one on your phone and you'll be live. And all of the episodes are taped. So you might go to iHeartRadio if you would like to hear yourself. So that's just something I threw in there.
I have some information for you.
Okay.
I found out that in the District of Columbia, Maine, and Vermont, felons never lose their right to vote, even while they are incarcerated.
Okay. Okay. Well, I know those guys in Florida voted this year.
Yes.
Because they someone paid their poll tax.
Yep, they did. You know, and it's also statistics that state that 2/3 of the people detained in jails report annual incomes of under $12,000. Prior to arrest, you know, but federal laws provide, you know, there are a number of fees that a person could be subjected to once they're released from jail. And federal law provides that child support enforcement can be garnished up to 65% of an individual's wages. On top of that, probation officers in most states can require that an individual dedicate 35% of their income towards payment of fine fees and surcharges or restitution. So You know, an example is one former incarcerated person that's living at or below the poverty level can be charged by four or five departments at once and required to surrender up to 100% of, you know, their earnings. So anybody that's being subjected to that, it's, you know, either go underground, you know, working under the table, do something illegal, or find themselves back in jail. So, you know, the system is definitely it's not reforming people, and in most instances it's set up to set up for failure. In 1996, President Clinton considered himself tough on crime. He wanted to be tougher than the Republicans at that point. So he instituted the he proposed the one strike and you're out legislation, which strengthened the eviction rules and strongly urged people that had drug convictions to automatically be excluded from public housing based on their criminal records. And at one point, you had someone living with you and you were in public housing. And even if you didn't know that they were involved in drugs or smoking drugs or whatever, and they got arrested and convicted, you would be subject to getting evicted as well. And, you know, and you didn't know anything about it. There's also been things that have been put in place to not only gerrymander, but, you know, this goes back to the right to vote. You know, with the restrictions on voting, at one point there was a poll taxes and literacy test, you know, that made it made voting practically impossible for a group of people at one particular time that had a lack of education. You know, there were literacy tests put in place. So if, you know, if there's 20 questions and you miss one, you fail. You can't vote. So throughout the years, things have been put in place to disenfranchise black and brown people, you know, from the right to vote, you know, up until, you know, recently, gerrymandering the voting districts to where a Democrat could still get the majority of votes, but a Republican wins the seat, you know, still wins, just based on the way that they have the district broken down. So there's been a lot of tricks and things put in place that have been used to hold people down. And it's been estimated that because lately, you know, there's been, you know, attention on prison reform and reducing prison sizes. So with that reduction in prison sizes, there appears to be, there's going to be more people on parole and probation that are going to have electronic devices that are going to be monitoring their movements. And a lot of people will be designated to be within a certain parameter or on house arrest. And so they're still going to be limited to their movements and actions, which is, you know, going to within itself create limitations in regard to what someone can do and where they can go. But it's been said that felony is the new N-word. So, you know, you got a felony, you might as well call a person a nigga. You know, say they don't have to call you a nigga anymore. They're just calling you a felon. They say today's lynching is a felony charge. Today's lynching is incarceration. Today's lynch mobs are professionals. They have badges. They have law degrees. A felony is a modern way of saying, I'm going to hang you up and burn you. Once you get that felony, you're on fire. So it's a system that has been built up against us, and even with cases that have been taken to the Supreme Court, they have been thrown out on the basis of, which is basically given the police departments carte blanche and immunity, because, you know, they can't be sued, you know. And so with these officers knowing that if it goes to court, chances are that they're going to, it's going to be ruled favorably in their, on their behalf. It gives them more incentive and confidence to continue to, you know, do these unjustified stops and, you know, the shooting of unarmed black people. And another thing with the war on drugs, initially when Reagan ruled it, rolled it out, there wasn't a lot of interest in it from the municipalities and jurisdictions. They weren't interested in, you know, adding something else to their plate. So, you know, and during that period of time, drug arrests weren't what they are now. So what they did was they created incentives and sent billions of dollars out to these states and local departments, and then they flooded them with military equipment. Some had tanks and, you know, military rifles and bulletproof vests and a number of things that the military only has. And so with those things in hand, and then getting all these grants, which are, you know, adding more money to their coffers, and then on top of that, allowing them to, once they're able to confiscate a lot of property and auction it off, you know, they're able to keep a lot of the proceeds. So there was incentive that was added to create an initiative to where the interest was there. And so, you know, on that's why a lot of these things had gone unregulated. And that's kind of where we are today with the war on drugs, with stop and frisk, stand your ground.
I didn't know if they were doing that again.
What's that?
Stop and frisk and all that other stuff. I think I have a caller. If I didn't, I might have spoken to her before. I say her, don't have to be. Okay, caller. Were you on before? Hello, caller. Okay, caller. Okay. Okay, so you can go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just saying, and I'll read some of in Frederick Douglass's words. He said, "Men are so constituted that they derive their conviction of their own possibilities largely from the estimate formed of them by others. If nothing is expected of a people, that people will find it difficult to contradict that expectation." So if you're called lazy and a loser and you know, that's what's expected of you, then, you know, pretty much you know, you can live up to that that expectation. And so in reading this information, I just found where a lot of what I've been living has made sense, just being formulated and being able to have dates and times and talk about the Supreme Court and different courts where, you know, cases have been brought to them and they have been thrown out just on the basis of frivolous legal fiction, whereas you have to, you know, you can say that, you know, based on the stats, you know, you got 800 black men that are being arrested and you only have, you know, two white men. And so, you know, the court says, okay, well, you have to show the intent that, you know, you have the intention on being, on committing another crime, and then the arresting officer has the intent on stopping you based on racial reasons. You know, a lot of legal mumble jumble that makes it, that has made it hard for equal justice. And so with that being said, and like the caller was saying earlier, you know, we're all in this together, and there needs to be energy formulated to combat the systemic and institutionalized racial components of how justice is being served, just based on I don't know what you do if these things are being taken all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is giving justice to you know, the illegal stops. Well, the, you know, not necessarily illegal, but I mean, constitutionally they could be illegal. You know, but you know, when the Supreme Court is allowing it, then I think, you know, it's an uphill battle. And I'll read one other thing from the Supreme Court. They have made it virtually impossible to challenge racial bias in the criminal justice system under the 14th Amendment, and it has barred litigation of such claims under federal civil rights laws as well. And that's under the 4th Amendment. So I think... and the 4th Amendment is a ban on unreasonable searches and seizures. So,
did you say the 14th? Did you say the 14th Amendment?
Yeah, the 14th Amendment. 14th Amendment to challenge racial bias in the criminal justice system under the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
And I also mentioned the. 4th Amendment, which is a ban on unreasonable search and seizures, and the fact that the courts are allowing these things to take place at the highest level, which is giving carte blanche to the police officers that are stopping motorists with the intent on, I say harassment, because if you're stopping somebody just based on, you know, the fact of they're black, then that's a problem right there in the beginning. But it happens.
Well, I like to make a comment on that.
Sure.
I think what we need to understand is, we as a people have to educate ourselves on the rules that we have to follow and use the rules against them when they violate them. Because the lack of education on a traffic stop gets us more in trouble because we don't understand how far they can go. Several months ago, I don't know if you remember, and I stated on my show that I was talking about traffic stops. You have rights as a driver to call their supervisor to the scene if you feel you are being harassed or unjustly committed a traffic violation, and they can't justify it. The thing is, I always tell people, that's today we have technology that can refute their charges against you if they are in violation. So what we want to do is educate the people on how to handle a traffic stop. I think that's
okay.
Very
I have a question. I have a question. If you have been stopped and they tell you you did this or that, and maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but if you say that you want to contact their supervisor, won't they get upset?
Who cares if they get upset? You already upset, aren't you?
Yeah,
stop.
But what I'm saying is I'm not going to be able to move, in other words, to pick up my phone.
No. That's not what I'm saying. Let's understand what I'm saying here. Their police departments now are mandated by the federal government to have body cams. That's what we're trying to push all across America, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The body cam is a double-edged sword. It can work for you, and they work against you as well as the police officer. We got to remember, at the time of the stop, everything is supposed to be recorded. Are you following
me?
Yeah,
but there are too many instances we have incidents where there are either no cameras or the cameras are off.
Exactly. So that's why I said it's imperative that we understand the rules and learn how to fight back in a nonviolent way with knowledge on how to handle that traffic stop. Because I've learned over the years, you can kill them with kindness and that'll throw them for a loop. Because they're already looking at you being hostile when they approach your vehicle. And if you have all your documents in order, that's a change of like new fresh air. And you act a little bit civil, give them 15 minutes of their fame, let them go through their routine until you know they overstepped their bounds. Then you go into that mode of understanding the things you need to do that you respectfully request a supervisor to the scene.
All right.
I'm just trying to say there's no right or wrong in this. The problem is we have to learn how to educate ourselves in trying to change the demeanor of the police officer. Because it seems like the system is not correcting that problem. I think it's up to us, the people that are being served by these people that are supposed to protect and serve, and we're not getting our just due. And I'm speaking from not just a black man or black police officer. I'm speaking now as a retired police officer because there's times that I've been stopped that I haven't gotten my just due. So I know if they treat me like that after I've identified myself, I'm praying I don't know what happens now to the regular citizen. So it's got me worried.
Yeah, I understand.
Now, welcome to the club.
Well, it's not so much that is that I'm worried about our children. I'm worried about our grandchildren. I'm worried about the millenniums that we leave behind, if we don't educate them on how to do what we know they need to do, that's our fault. That's nobody else's fault but ours. Because we're supposed to protect them.
Yeah, you know, and on top of that, I'd like to add one other thing to this mass incarceration conversation before we kind of turn the page and talk about our brother, Benny Napoleon, Wayne County Sheriff, who just passed away yesterday. But the final thought on this conversation and the system of mass incarceration and how it's so efficient in sweeping black people of color, off the street and locking them in cages. then releasing them back into an inferior second-class society. You know, the war on drugs has been very efficient. And the, I guess, you know, a lot of people are really wondering how in a colorblind criminal justice system, how such racial discriminatory things can take place. The process occurs in two stages. And the first step is to grant law enforcement officials the extraordinary discretion regarding whom to stop, search, arrest, and charge for drug offenses, thus ensuring that conscious and unconscious racial beliefs and stereotypes will be given free rein. Unbridled discretion inevitably creates huge racial disparities. And then the damning step, you know, is to close the courthouse doors to all claims by defendant and private litigants that the criminal justice system operates in a racially discriminatory fashion. So, you know, demanding anyone who wants to challenge racial bias in the system, you know, in advance, clear proof that the racial disparities are the product of intentional racial discrimination. You know, it's pretty much the design has helped to produce the most extraordinary system of racialized social control that the world has ever seen. So that's how it goes about it. The Supreme Court pretty much, you know, grants law enforcement the extraordinary discretion on whom to stop, search, arrest, and charge for drug offenses. And the fact that you can't bring racial bias litigation to them just puts a lot of people in a trick bag. And, you know, and then therefore a lot of people forfeit their property, you know, especially if the cost of defending, you know, or getting it back is going to be more than what it's worth. You know, people in a lot of instances have just wrote it off as a loss. So that's kind of where we are now. I think this is a conversation that we could have in a series. I think this could probably just be the first show in a series of mass incarceration and new Jim Crow laws that have been instituted in an invisible way to where, you know, even some of the people that are operating in the system, you know, even black people, you know, black attorneys or, you know, the congressional, the black caucus, you know, was in support of the bill in 96 that Biden sponsored and Clinton pushed through, you know, for, you know, the war on drugs. So I think in some instances, black people can be, you know, we can be duped into, you know, these things that are affecting us disproportionately as well. But, you know, I'll end this segment of the show on that note.
Okay, I have another caller. Yes. I have another caller. Caller, you're on.
Thank you, Jenny White, and to your co-host and to Officer. Glad to hear from you this evening. I just wanted to make a comment. You remember when our president was saying that he has been better to the black people than Abraham Lincoln?
He said Jesus Christ.
He said that too, but he said Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
Abraham Lincoln laid the screws to us when he did that. His goal was not to free black people.
That's
he could
right.
Keep the union together. To he would do it in any way possible.
Only
if he had
reason.
To keep the slaves, or let the slaves, it was fine with him. What he did was he freed the slaves in the state that he wasn't over anymore because this war was going on. And that took place. But after he just went and freed all the slaves, but he left himself an out when he put it in that they could use the criminal justice system to enslave us again, that loophole that we talk about. This is what they've been working with. Okay, that's when it started. Like, remember the picture Gone with the Wind when Skylar O'Hara. She's doing the business of the lumber business after the war and trying to make it. So she hires the convict labor to come in there, and that he's going to beat them and starve them and stuff to make them work. And they get the money off of it, but it's cheaper labor. This is the whole thing. Mm. The South needed labor, and that's when they turned their head, even with the Jim Crow laws and things of that nature. After the Civil War ended, Black people were making strides forward. The original thing that Abraham Lincoln wanted to do, when he talked to a lot of Black business people in the South, in the North, he wanted to, after the war, he wanted to take all the Black people out of the United States and put them on the island of Grenada, and y'all build that up. And a lot of them said, wait a minute, I built this country up. I've been here before a lot of whites and all of this. So this is what I want to stay here, because there was something here. He said, you would never be accepted by the white staff. They will never accept you. And so this was the problem. But during Reconstruction, Black people were making strides forward. They became citizens. They were on the Congress, in the state Congress, and things like that. They started to vote. You know, they were doing everything. And they still could not handle that. That's when they had a problem with the election of 1877 when Grant was leaving office. So that's when they had that private meeting. That they call it the Compromise of 1877, when they said, let's make a deal. Okay, you want the presidency. Rutherford B. Hayes, we'll let you be the president. We want you to take all the northern troops out of the South. And that's what they did. When he removed all the northern troops out of the South, then the South was able to start to enslave Black people on any everything they could. You could be walking down the street, and you would lose your city. Don't you owe me some money, man? It was some type of a program they had. And she said, I owe you nothing, you know, all of this. And they began to enslave them and put them back in the fields because they needed that cheap labor to build up the South again. That was a big problem there. And it wasn't until 100 years later that when the civil rights, we kept protesting and things of that nature, that finally Johnson was able to sign. It was in 1964 and 1965, the civil rights laws. Now they're trying to erode all of that. You know, it keeps going on. If you win in one area, what they'll do is change the laws so you can lose. It's just something about it that, you know, the big problem I see, that I feel that we should, and I think the young lady who called in, she talked about it. We have in our community, we have to come together, especially in regards to these drugs. Now, the Black Panther Party had a very good a program of building up Black people from the inside. They didn't want the drugs here, so in order to, they beat a lot of federal cases. The Black Panther Party was able to do that. And if you ever get the movie, it was put out by Mario Van Peebles. It was called The Panther Party. It's a very good movie to show how they had offices in all in the major areas and how they had the respect of each other. And this is what they emphasized. But the problem came when the federal government under the Edgar Hoover, was it Hoover? He said, I know we're going to put drugs in their neighborhood. Then we had some drugs, okay. But they put it in the neighborhood where it became a mass thing. And you don't give a person who's down and feeling bad about themselves something like that. Because then you begin to rely on it. You begin to, you know, so that's what this drugs are all about. You still can't, even when you try to teach your children, what I found out, leave the stuff alone. You don't need that. They feel it's recreational, it's this, it's that. Even in our areas, I think I was listening to, what's his name? This rapper that was always in jail, and they had to go to the Supreme Court to get him out of jail or have him, you know, what's his name? Mick. Oh, I was
Meek Mill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Meek
Mill.
He
talked about how, I think it came out about how the Black police officer in the neighborhood, they would bother your child. You go and sell this. If you don't sell this, we're going to arrest you for drugs. You don't want to be involved, so they get and try to sell it, and then they get caught, and they still go to jail. See, all of this, we have this criminal element that's among us, even with a lot of the police officers, because they want to make them, you know, the money and all of this stuff. I know a lot of them would complain. They say, well, we would sell and get the money, and they call themselves doing a bust, and they would take some of the money for themselves, you know. So we have this criminal element that we have to deal with within our community. If we could handle our own community, it would be a lot better, and we would have a better handle on it for handling what's outside the community. That's what I'm looking at. But you try to tell them, leave it alone. You don't have to buy that. Do something with this. It's a recreational thing. And I was talking with one guy who made his living on that, you know. And he said, you'll never get people to stop with the weed and stuff like that. And they have the medicinal weed and all of this stuff, anything to keep you sluggish, you know, or whatever, you know, so you don't know what's really happening to you. But you try to teach your children. That's not needed. Leave that alone. It's not needed. I'll, you know, to try to show them a better way. But it seems like you're six of one and a half dozen the other, you know, whatever it is. But that's the thing that keeps us down. When they get in trouble, you can't afford the kind of money that those people are using to need in order to have a good representation. I was just looking at the guy that they just put to death, that 18-year-old that was, after all these years, they finally put him to death. And there were a lot of things that came out later on that the prosecuting attorney hid and things like that. Well, he had a court-appointed attorney who didn't know nothing, didn't care enough about nothing, you know, all this.
Mm-hmm.
And so after all these years of being in jail, it still cost him his life. He was an accomplice. Mm-hmm. They build a case against you. You don't know how, like Officer was saying, we have to educate them as to how to handle certain things like the traffic stops, handle this or handle that. But who do they go to? And we don't have the type of money to fight cases like that. It's sad in our community, but when they get in trouble, you know, you try, you know, but you just don't have that kind of money to fight cases like that. I know my son, he was off in Texas, and he had a car accident, and I'm thankful that I had him covered with the insurance. But then even then, he was so hard-headed and wouldn't try to listen to me, you know, until it came down in his face, you know. But I did have him insured. That's the only thing I could do. And that was really something. But you're trying, what he's saying is we have to educate our children, but they have to listen because this system is not for them. The millennials, they think they know everything.
Yeah.
You know, your grandchildren, you see them growing up. But, you know, and then the people who are the single parents who have the children, they don't want to be bothered. They don't want to be bothered and raised. They want to get out there and still be out there, you know, acting like they're young. The grandparents, the younger, they want to get out there with them too, with the millennials. You know, what can you do? It's frustrating. You know, you see what's happening. You see what kind of representation we've had with this COVID and all this other stuff, but you cannot make them sit down and listen. This is the way you handle something. And they get in trouble, and the system is not going to be nice to them. Bishop Jakes has that Tory program for reentry. He's trying to take them, get them started, get them educated, get them this and that, and to put them back into the system where they won't go out and start doing the same thing in order to make a living. You try all this, but, you know, it's a very good program from what I understand. He has his graduation program, but this COVID has just torn into every program that, you know, that we did have set up. And that's all I wanted to say. I agree that there's a need, but there's a need for us to come together and within our own community.
That's true. I agree. I appreciate you.
In other words, shut up. Okay, I love you.
I didn't say that. No.
But we do have the element that's there. We have. And women are becoming more. And women are there are more arrests for women who are doing some crazy things now, you know. They fight over the men, they fight over this, they everything, you know. And they are the prison, they're getting some real stiff prison terms. My understanding was they were supposed to be putting a black woman to death sometime this week. That's what I heard. This is going out, you know, whatever. It's going to be a black woman.
Well, let us hope not. Okay, I appreciate that.
No, you don't. Thank you, Officer. But we do have to educate our people. But they have to listen also.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, you too. Okay, we're turning the page now.
Okay.
Is Officer Barnes still on? Yeah.
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, let's talk about Benny Napoleon. Did you know him?
I actually work with Benny Napoleon. We worked together in Gang Squad back in the early 70s. And a very interesting individual that was a lot of character, rambunctious. He had a lot of drive, and his personality was he got along with almost everybody. So for me, it was an honor to work under him as chief. And tonight, I wanted to celebrate his homegoing a different way in tribute to him and the first responders. I wrote a testimony. If you don't mind, I can share that with you and the audience.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I sat down and I thought about some things about Benny as in his career. You know, he was police chief for Detroit Police, and then he became the Wayne County Sheriff. And that's from a lot of people that have known him. He's always stepped up to the plate and honored the request of others to make this city safe and the county safe. So tonight I wish to pay tribute and honor not just to him but to all the first responders. My tribute is in memory of the brave men and women who are called to duty as the first responders. Our police officers, our firefighters, our emergency technicians, our doctors, our nurses, and all of those who have made it possible for our lives to get through this year dealing with the silent enemy. It is my intention to honor all warriors called the first responders, so I wrote this testimony. Down the corridors of time comes the memory of brave individuals, the many who, throughout their careers performing different roles of service, have given their all, sacrificed their very lives for the citizens of their community, and obeying the oath that they took which governed them all. This year, we have experienced the loss of so many of those unsung heroes who have made the supreme sacrifice by giving their all to make each and every citizen of all communities safe. Their heroism, their supreme sacrifice, their courage, their devotion to duty is a constant inspiration to those who are still trying to carry on. Let not their death be in vain is a cry so often heard, but how idle a statement unless we, the people, truly implement it with acts and give it meaning. Are we to sit idly by, frightened from doing our part in making our community safe, and doing our part to fight and destroy this invisible enemy that has plagued us? We must pledge that we will not permit their heroic deaths to be forgotten and do everything within our power to give meaning to their sacrifices for humanity. I am sure on some lonely hilltop the fires of appreciation are raging. Ancient warriors are gathering, raising their torches high. I, myself, Officer Reggie, now ignite my torch from one warrior to many other warriors in hope in some humble way that this torch signifies a greater appreciation for the years of dedication and devotion to duty. I proudly salute Sheriff and our old police chief, Benny Napoleon, and all of the brave warriors who have made the supreme sacrifice for humanity. God bless us all, and remember to mask up. So in closing, I wish to wish everyone a safe Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you, Greg. Happy holidays.
Yes, that was good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And on that note,
did you have something you wanted to say?
No, I would like to say that I didn't know, you know, Benny Napoleon personally, but, you know of him, you know, being you know, from Detroit and being around. And so had nothing but good things to say about him. You know, he ran for mayor in 2013. You know, he wasn't able to get that accomplishment. He has an extensive resume. You know, he went to school and became an attorney as well. You know, my condolences to his family and his daughter as well. COVID-19 is no joke. We have a new vaccine out here, but I've heard, as Pfizer said, it's they've got a lot of it sitting in warehouses because they have no direction on where to send it from the White House.
Oh, that's crazy.
So go figure that.
That's crazy.
But, I think we had a good show on mass incarceration. I think that we'll continue that in series where we'll talk about different aspects of black and brown people being convicted of crimes and having a number of charges loaded up on them so that they take a plea bargain for a lesser offense, which still gives them a felony and puts them in the system, and how in one city in the state of California, almost every young black man at some point had been caught up to the point at least where they were taken and their fingerprints were put in the system, even if they weren't arrested. You know, they had almost a copy of all the young men in the city. If they didn't have the DNA, they had the fingerprints. So we'll continue to uncover different aspects of that and different aspects of how our Congress and politicians have been complicit in this. And the direction is going in, and it said that systematic racism hasn't gone away. It's just been redesigned. And so we just, you know, have to be able to identify the chameleon for what it is and in the places that it's at. Just like, you know, they say that this computer hack Russia has put on the United States is the largest in U.S. history. So that's something that we'll be dealing with for years to come. We never know where they're at and what information they have and what systems they'll just be sitting and not
doing anything.
Well, they
had a lot of friends in the government that could have given him secrets that no one is supposed to know. And I believe, that's my belief, that it came from somebody.
Well, I mean,
or some person. Or
it came from Donald Trump. Donald Trump allowed, the door, left the door open. You know, like Motel 6 say, you know, we'll leave the light on for you. You know, they left the door open so that Russia could do that. And so, you know, that's, another conversation we could have on another show.
That's true.
Because at some point, you know, just like I don't remember exactly when it was. Was it 2003 when the lights went out?
Yes, sir. You 2003 know. In the summer of 2003. I remember because they sent me. I was working for DPS to go to the schools as a one-man unit to see if they'd be in the schools. I said, "Oh yeah, okay, I'll do that."
Right. Okay.
I won't tell you what I did, but I tell you I didn't go to the school.
I know that's right.
I mean, the radio wasn't even working right. So, I mean, how can I call for help? I didn't have any backup. So
they were setting you up for failure.
That's exactly right. That's what I said. They gave me a 1988 Houthi car with a battery charger and a milk crate.
Wow.
As a seat. So
wow.
That was a punishment. I don't know what was.
Yeah, that was bad. We'll have to talk about that. So, you know, somewhere down the line, you know, if our lights go out again, you know, we'll know who to blame. So So that's it, Jenny White. I think we've had a great show. I don't know. We're off the air. Well, next Friday is Christmas, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Next Friday is Christmas, and we're going to take a vacation. But before we go, and before I say that, I have a guest that I would like for them to say something. Hello? Hello, guest. Oh, shoot. Be gone.
Are you putting somebody else on the spot?
Are you gone?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Well, hello, Jenny White. Hello, Mr. Coleman and Officer Barnes.
Good evening.
Hello, Ms.
Terry. From Texas. It has been really enlightening listening to all of you.
Yes, well, thank you for tuning in.
Thank you.
And, yeah, we enjoy having you.
Don't you just love how she put you on the spot? Right. You never know it as a listener when you're going to be a guest.
You never know. Thank you, Jenny White.
Right. She just started saying hello, hello. You like, okay, is she talking to me?
No,
right.
I'm just sitting here listening like a voyeur.
Right. Yeah, she didn't put you off
mute. Okay. I have, yes, I do. And I seem to have another caller. Hello,
right,
caller. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I guess you can hear me, right?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. Can you give me the stats of how many women are in jail versus how many men?
Let me see.
In jail or prison?
Both.
I don't have them.
I can't give you that information right now. But
yeah,
if you come back.
We can have it for you on another show. Or
I
you just Google it,
you.
I'm sure you.
The reason I'm asking is because the title of your description page of your show is Why Are More Women Incarcerated in Jail Than Men? And I never knew that there were more women in jail or in prison than men.
No, it says jails.
Oh, so jail.
As opposed to prison. That's what it was about.
No, all right. So they're awaiting trial, in other words.
Yeah. They couldn't get out.
Okay. So this is, all right. So how come, why is that? How come more women are, they must be arrested more than men?
I don't know. It didn't say anything about them being arrested. It said that they had lower incomes than incarcerated men and had a harder time affording their bails.
Oh.
It was harder to stay in touch with their families and, you know.
So I guess you must have been reading an article that was talking about this thing.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I sure was.
All right.
I wasn't saying it from experience.
Oh, all right. Okay. I didn't know that men incarcerated in jails.
I might be able to help you with that. I have a little information. In the United States, as of this year, there's approximately 101,000 women in local jails and over 99,000 women in state prisons as of this year.
All right. What about the men?
I don't have that information because you ask about the women.
Yeah. Because the operative word is more. And as far as I know, there have never been more women arrested than men. Women get better sentences than men for the same offenses. They usually serve lesser time than men. And there are fewer women in prison than men. So that's
I agree with that because Statistically, men are the ones that have gotten in more trouble than the women at the time of the incarceration. As Brother Coleman said earlier about the enslavement, I think it's all by design. If you remember, let's go back to the urban areas, that they predominantly were controlled by the white police officers in black neighborhoods. So they were geared more to having statistics on arrest. So we have, over the history of incarceration of the black race, you'll know that they fudged the numbers, fudged the reports, kept documents away that would exonerate them and put us into the prison system, which was all about economics. That's all this is majority about, economics. And until we're educated about why we're going to jail, I don't think they, you know, most of us understand why we need to find a way to stay out of going to jail.
Yeah. I would think, now I've had a theory for a while that if a real thorough, honest investigation was done into who commits crimes and they were to categorize them by race, I bet you would find that more Spanish people, especially darker-skinned Spanish people, would be considered black on the statistics, pumping up the numbers of how many black people are criminals.
You know what? And I would tend to agree with you on that.
Well, I'm going to agree with you because they categorize as people of color.
But Hispanics don't want to be considered.
I'm not talking about the Hispanics themselves. No, I'm not talking about. I'm talking about the system.
Yeah. Well, the system, wouldn't the system have to then judge Hispanics as either, because there's white Hispanics and then there's other Hispanics, which I presume are Hispanics of color. But
right.
That's a category that's separate than black. If you were to have, that's my opinion, is that if you had the thorough investigation, let's say you had a million blacks in jail, you had 500,000 other Hispanics in jail, right? Those two categories. I bet if you did a thorough investigation, you could take 200,000 away from the black category and add it to the other Hispanics. So when you're talking about fudging the numbers, they're pumping it up to make blacks look like they're the ones who are committing the vast majority of crimes, when it's not especially true. Again, I think they're just taking Hispanics, for instance, and throwing them into the black category when they shouldn't be.
Okay, let me explain what everybody's all up in arms about. I'm not saying that there are more women incarcerated than men. It's more women are incarcerated in jails than men. And I have another caller that would like to say something. Caller, are you there?
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm in the state of Oklahoma.
Okay.
And Oklahoma has placed number one in the world for incarcerating women. We are double the national rate. National rate's 133.
Whoa.
Oklahoma is 266.
Wow.
You might find some models. Previously, President Obama came to our prisons in Oklahoma. He's the first president to make such a visit to any prison. I think people need to look at Oklahoma and see why that problem is so huge. And I can tell you one thing, the judges will be harsher on a female that is considered guilty than a man that's considered guilty. I could cite
that.
Many different examples, but I'm just saying maybe that might be a good place to look at. And
okay.
I guess I've said my piece.
Well, I thank you. What was your name?
Angela.
Angela, thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
I
just want to listen,
that.
If that's okay.
Okay, well, call back again, and you can talk some more. Okay. Everybody had their last say?
Yep, happy holidays, everybody.
Yes.
Okay. And before we go, I would like to say, I think as you grow older, your Christmas list gets smaller and the things you really want for the holidays can't be bought. So having said that, I say thank you for all of my callers who called in. I appreciate that. Those of you that just listened and didn't call in, I appreciate you for listening. I really do. And next Friday is Christmas. So be safe. Keep your mask on. You know, do what you do, but be very careful because the coronavirus doesn't care who you are. So let us live to see 2021, okay? And we will be on vacation for Christmas. So we will probably have a rerun. And the following Friday will be the first day of the year, January the 1st. So I think we're still going to be on vacation. We will be back January the 8th, 2021. And having said that, I thank you all for listening to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show.